live. Welcome to episode 33 of To The Unknown Pod, a subset of the Thank God For Bitcoin podcast. My name is Jordan Bush. I am the executive director of TGFB Media, which exists to help Christians understand and use Bitcoin for the glory of God and the good of people everywhere. Today, I am finally joined by the Iowan boys, who I will allow to introduce themselves right now.
Hey, I'm Oshawa Hawthorne, father of eight. Live in the great war zone of Portland, Oregon, or so they say. And I lead a ministry called Brilliance Labs, and we like helping ministries understand Bitcoin.
I'm Ryan Finley, father of six, former resident of Portland. I departed about 10 years ago before it turned into a war zone, literally, though. With no regrets. But yeah, it's good to be here.
I'm Matt Purvis, pastor in Hawaii, and Ryan also escaped Hawaii before the lava hit, so he's good at doing that stuff.
He likes running away. He's just kind of he goes to greener pastures.
Yeah, I run businesses, and I recently updated my Twitter profile to business as mission and activism and politics.
You're not supposed to do that, Ryan. You're a pastor. Okay, we're moving on. Today the title is gold the new Bitcoin? This is, for those of you who aren't aware, gold is mooning right now. Gold is over $4,000 an ounce, or at least it was as of yesterday. $4,000 an ounce. There was, I believe, a quick story in 2020, somewhere around there. My wife pleaded with me to buy an ounce of gold. We had, you know, we had bought Bitcoin the year before that, and vast majority of our net worth was in Bitcoin. She basically begged me to get at least an ounce to quote unquote diversify. And so because I love my wife, I was like, okay, I'll buy one. So we spent $1,600 on an ounce of gold that I held for about...
What was Bitcoin at then?
Bitcoin was at about 40,000. The problem was Bitcoin went all the way down to 16,000. And so I was begging with my wife at around that time. I was like, oh, please let me sell this. We can buy it back. We can buy the gold back, you know? And so then gold, you know, Bitcoin, if we would have bought it, we would have gotten around a tenth of a coin. Ended up holding on to it, sold it last year, and so now we don't own any more gold. But gold is straight mooning. It's going crazy. Peter Schiff was right. That's right. All the gold bugs are triumphant. And again, we are happy for the gold people. We just want you to know that. Listen, we think gold is great. So what we want to do is we want to talk about both Bitcoin and gold, which are both at all-time highs. We want to talk about why that is. We want to talk about what we can learn from that about the broader market sentiment and broader economic sentiment across the board, both in the States and around the world. So we're going to lead off by taking a look at a tweet from Vijay Voyapati. Let's see here. It is this one. Here we go. Vijay. Gold hit $4,000, which is 0.3 Bitcoin, thanks to the Opportunity Cost app. 0.03 Bitcoin today. This is by far the most important macro story right now. Eventually, Bitcoin will steal gold's luster and position as preeminent non-sovereign store of value. But today, pour went out for the gold bugs. Impressive. So again, let's just kind of talk about, I'll let Ash kind of introduce this to us. Why is gold mooning? What does this mean for the broader market sentiment?
Well, historically, gold represents a protection against an unstable economy. It's this reserve asset. It's a flight to safety, supposedly. And I think what's most interesting now is we're in a place where stocks are at an all-time high. And so you're not having this big like market crash where people are running away from stocks. You also have this issue with interest rates are high. You have all these nation states that started buying gold and moving away from treasuries. And so it feels different. It feels like, hey, there's clearly shocks in the system because you're getting mixed messages. And it's almost like something else is broken. Like it's a denominator issue. It's what are we measuring all of this growth in? Yes, whoa, look, stock market's all-time high. But the dollar's down 10% against other currencies just this year. And so maybe the issue's with the dollar, not with a ragingly wonderful economy.
All right, Ash, unpack this for me. We could have gotten that tweet up, but you're referencing there was a tweet about the fact that the dollar is down 10% on the year against other national currencies. Can you kind of unpack what does that mean? Like for people who, again, I'm sure we have people who are just listening to this who don't understand any of these dynamics. So kind of unpack some of that.
Yeah. So again, I'm not a macro expert, but the most common number that we think about as Americans is CPI and inflation. And yes, it's kind of slowly going up, but for the most part, it still seems to be manageable. But this concept that the dollar's weakening in the global economy, that is a warning signal. Like there's some flashing, like little dash lights going on that says, hey, not everything is going well. Even though you might not feel it in a day-to-day, right? Zoom out a little bit. Or like for us, I'm gonna be traveling to Switzerland next week with my wife for an anniversary trip. And wow, are things expensive if you're using the dollar to buy things in Switzerland?
Yeah. Define CPI for someone who doesn't know.
Yeah, that's the consumer price index. Those are the official numbers that we're given about what's the increase in the cost of a basket of goods for your average American consumer.
And it's usually under represented by about half. So when they say, you know, see if inflation's at 4%, we're usually at least seeing 8%. So
Ryan, is that in comparison to the number of dollars in the system? Is that how you're comparing it?
It typically goes, I think we've increased the money supply. It's somewhere about, it's around 7 to 8% a year on average. And that just so happens to be how much, like a lot of things that are hard to print go up. You know, so like, for example, ground beef is a you know, we've talked about that before, but it's a better representative of inflation. So if you see ground beef going up a lot this year, it's going up twice as much, and that's not all because of debasement. It's also we're getting wild fluctuations in the beef market. So instead of it going up 6 or 8%, I think we're already up 12%. So everyone's going to notice the price of meat is going to be a lot higher this year and going forward.
I don't want to start in the weeds. I just want to understand are we saying that the ideal comparison of like truth versus CPI being the government's provided increase, do you guys think that CPI being the sort of semi-truth sort of lie compared to the number of dollars inflated is the right way to do it? Or is that too simplistic? Is the number of dollars not exactly what we're doing? Printed.
The increase in the money supply seems to be much more accurate. So it's closer to, a 7 or 8%.
And there are obviously, like, if there's a famine, like then the money supply will also be affected. Like, it's not just like it's just the money supply. There are other dynamics that can factor in, but for most things, the most impactful indicator is the money supply. This is where, I mean, like, this is for most things, like the money supply increase will be the primary accounting for those returns. So this actually, what this ought to do is ought to change how you look at and how you think about investment returns, because you have to, like, you need to factor in when you see a return on something, you need to factor in, okay, wait a second. If I know that most of this is just the monetary supply, this would happen even regardless of what the thing itself is doing, then it really does change the way that you think about them.
Like the historical stock return, like over the last 20 or 30 years, like it, if you had all your money in stocks, you were basically just keeping up with inflation. So you could close your eyes and throw darts at a wall and you were just going to keep up with inflation.
Well, I got a practical example.
Gold actually outdid the stock market. So,
I mean, before I know I brought us into these weeds. I just wanted to define our terms, but we can get back to the macro. But example in my life, I'm trying to figure out what my a commercial building that I'm managing should be rented for if I chose to go that route. And it was like $6,000-$7,000 a month. And I'm like, whoa, that's a lot. And then I was like, well, what did I used to pay on my mortgage? Look back, it was like $3,400 a month.
Yep.
And I thought, and I had AI calculate for me inflation from 2013 till now based on CPI and based on money supply. And it was drastically different. And I was like, nope, $7,000 a month is what I was paying in 2013 when I paid $3,400 a month.
Yep.
You know, especially if you count it as, so that's just a real practical example of like, it's real, guys, it's real, you know, because I remember it and that number sounds high to me, but it isn't high. It's the same as what I was paying.
And this is really what, I mean, the place that I think about this the most is when it comes to like gas prices with your grandparents. It's like, right, when our grandparents, we used to ask your grandparents, oh, you know, I'm showing my age. I'll be 38 very soon, within the next week here. I'll be celebrating my birthday. But we used to go to my granddad. We used to ask him, you know, what was gas prices when you were young? And he would tell us it was a nickel per gallon. And so the question is, has gas gotten better or worse since then? And the reality is that gas has gotten worse. Like, we have ethanol in our gas. They just had plain gas. And so he's like, why is it $3 a gallon or whatever it is versus a nickel? You know, and a lot of this, it just has to do with debasement. It has to do with the currency can purchase so much less now.
And insane politics.
Yeah.
Like Oregon, California, Washington.
Yep.
And
there's people with their hands out taking money off of the top.
The governments are all going broke. And so they have a fleet of people trying to figure out how to squeeze more money out of their tax base.
Yes. And so that's all of these cases. So basically historically and right now, gold is kind of this thing that basically it's like a release valve. It's basically a cry for help. Where people are, it's just basically demonstrates that people don't have confidence in the stock market or in government bonds or in other things. They don't have confidence in those things. And so they're going to look for something that doesn't depend on government, that doesn't have a counterparty. And so again, with gold, you can custody it yourself. You don't need to trust anybody. I would imagine you have people who are taking their, if they have gold in safety deposit boxes or other kind of stuff like that, they're taking them out and they want to hold it because they want to know that they have it. And so again, this is where Bitcoin comes in too. And this is why Bitcoin is called digital gold, because you can take the same sort of custody with Bitcoin in a way that you don't need to rely on third parties, to access it. And so, this is going on. We have another tweet here. This is from.
I want to say one more thing.
Do it.
Yeah, the gold bugs were the original. Like they saw that gold represented proof of work long before Bitcoin was around. So I've always had a lot of respect for gold bugs. I know a bunch of them. And over these last several years, like a lot of the macro people, like Luke Gromen and Lynn Alden. They have big gold portfolios. Lawrence Lepard. And the reason is they understand it, gold's going to go up for the same reason that Bitcoin is. Yeah. It you know, because you already have governments, they already believe in it. They understand why it's valuable.
I think you can easily make the case that despising gold is both a first and fifth commandment violation. Like it's despising the world that God made. And it's also despising the wisdom of our fathers. And that's, again, I posted a tweet of the Norman Rockwell guy who's standing up at the town meeting with his hand in the air or whatever, or standing up and just basically taking a stand. And it says, I'm happy for the gold bugs. Because again, the reasons why they've been mocked and derided for decades are ridiculous reasons. Like they're telling the truth. They've been shining light on the lies that the system is rooted in. So to see them justified is a good thing. It's something that we're going to continue to get to see more of.
100%. Yeah. It's right. And they deserve it. Yep. They deserve the win. Like, correct. Ron Paul, I'm super happy for Ron Paul. Like, he's a big gold guy.
Yep.
And yeah, it's criminal because they were the ones that were calling out the lies and the debasement and the wickedness that the fiat system represents. And everyone, and basically they were made fun of because as they were calling it out, they were saying, we need to go back to gold. And so then they were mocked and, you know, slandered. And
again, what they were never wrong. They were telling the truth. They were absolutely right. What they didn't take into account necessarily was the willingness of and the extent to which these governments and stuff were willing to go to, the ridiculous ends or lengths that they were willing to go to in order to maintain their Ponzi scheme. Like that's really what we're seeing. So it's not that they were right or they were wrong and now they're right. They've been right the whole time. And now the system has gotten to a point where it's beyond, you know, there's nothing that they can do to try to get themselves out of this. So we're going to show this tweet from Tyler Durden. For those of you guys who don't know, Tyler Durden is the character from what's that movie?
Fight Club.
And then he's also a Twitter person. So I'm going to use the handle here. So 2 years ago, I said I believe Bitcoin would match gold market cap this cycle. I was very wrong in this idea. So this is since the beginning of the year. The chart doesn't show this, but gold is over above $4,000 now. Since the beginning of the year, gold has outperformed most things, including Bitcoin. Bitcoin, if we go back 12 months, Bitcoin is still outperforming it. But since January 1, Peter Schiff taking the W's in the chat. He's thrilled. We'll look at this one too. So this is from Sitebringer. This is this account called The Prophet. It's a really great account. Highly recommend. Go follow it. But The Prophet says this. We're going to read this whole thing. It's a little bit long, but it's worth it. Here we go. All right. So what you're seeing, we're going to scroll down here. What you're really seeing here with gold and Bitcoin being at all-time highs is the first stage of a global unit of account fracture. In nominal US dollar terms, okay, so the price that things have, and that homes have, whatever that they have right now, everything looks like it's booming. Stocks up triple digits, homes up double digits, quote-unquote wealth everywhere. That's the performance everyone sees. In gold terms, however, the illusion cracks. Stocks and homes are flat to negative. Real wealth is stagnating. So if you're to denominate a house in terms of the ounces of gold it takes to buy it, that's what this is referencing, or stocks and the amount of ounces of gold that it takes to buy them relative to other points. In Bitcoin terms, the veil is gone. Catastrophic real losses in every traditional asset over the last 2 years. This is the same signature that marked every pre-hyperinflationary or currency regime shift in history. When people cling to the debasing unit, in this case, the dollar, or the other, whatever the other national fiat currency is around the world, they feel rich, but measured in the next credible collateral, their system is already collapsing. And the quote-unquote risk asset meme about Bitcoin, that's just a coping frame. As long as Wall Street treats Bitcoin as a tech stock with volatility, they can keep it in the risk bucket. But functionally, it's already behaving like a parallel reserve ledger. It's the only denominator that makes the post-2020 global economy look like Argentina, which means it's not a good thing. It demonstrates how everything is doing as badly as Argentina was. This is why the system feels quote-unquote off, why wages don't match prices, why debt is ballooning, why policy feels reactive. We're in a regime where the unit of account is decaying faster than the public narrative can absorb. The Fed, the government, the media, all still speaking USD, all still benchmarking to a melting ice cube. The chart you're looking at is the unofficial scoreboard in a silent currency war. So when I strip all the polite commentary away, the honest take is, one, the US is running the final phase of a classic imperial carry trade. Draw in global capital, so draw in currency from around the world. Inflate domestic asset prices in nominal terms, export the currency risk abroad. Okay, that's what's going on with the dollar. Gold shows stagnation. So when denominated in gold terms, things don't look anywhere near as rosy. They're kind of stagnant, staying stable, but not increasing. And then Bitcoin shows collapse. And in Bitcoin terms, everything is just collapsing. Bitcoin, the price of a home denominated in Bitcoin now relative to even just 4 years ago, it takes way less Bitcoin to buy a house now. If Bitcoin continues to monetize, that chart is a pre-revaluation ledger of the old world being marked down. This isn't a normal market cycle. It's the unit of account transition phase. Almost no one is positioned for it because they're still measuring their quote-unquote returns with the wrong yardstick. That's the scarve layer, not just quote-unquote debasement trade, but a living record of a dying denominator. And so he's showing this chart from Luke Grohman, who we'd love to have on the program at some point. Luke, come on, we love you. And so Luke is demonstrating. So here's all these charts laid over one another. So we have the S&P 500, NASDAQ, Standard & Poor's Index. So you have the stock market. You have, let's see, what else you have? Bitcoin, there we go. You've got gold, you've got a bunch of other gold things. And so you can see right here, like what's going on. Everything is getting crushed or is flat. Bitcoin's breaking out. What's the blue one? Is this the S&P?
Hey, Jordan, I put links in our studio chat.
Do it.
Comparing S&P to gold and S&P to Bitcoin. Could you pull up that first link in the chat on the macrotrends.net?
Give me 1 second here.
So that'll let us see this image a little clearer.
Cool. There we go.
And you can
Ash, keep describing what's in that image.
You can choose your time horizon. So I pulled up the 10-year time horizon of gold to the S&P. And what you see is this total breakout. Actually, do the 20-year. The 20-year is the best one to see it.
Gold price versus stock market or Bitcoin versus S&P?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, versus stock market. And then click on the 20-year because you're going to see the 08 and what happened. So they're going to start at zero.
All right. Here we go. Hang on. See this?
Yeah. Now click on the 20 years. There you go. So it's starting at the beginning in 06 or something.
Yep.
The same. And then you see the 08 crash. You see the stock market go down. Gold rips up. And then gold significantly underperforms as you have growth.
From basically 2011.
Yeah. So you have the economy recovering. You have all the money being pumped into real estate and global dynamics. You have COVID, or again, stock market underperforms.
Little kiss in 2018 here. What happened in 2018 that caused this?
That's when the economy started sputtering.
Yep.
That's when the cracks started showing leading up to 2020. Yeah, a lot of that was they needed to find an excuse to print money because there was things that were breaking.
Yep.
If you go back, and that's when gold just took off.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you look at here's December 2019, right when COVID's starting, down to March 2020. This is the bottom of the stock market. You know, the bloody, whatever it was, Thursday or Wednesday. And then you see right after this, as this is all going on, gold is just mooning. Goes over there, starts to settle a little bit. The stock market nominally recovers, and then boom, we just, gold going parabolic, going crazy. Matt, you are making noise. Let's see here. Or is it Ryan? It's Ryan for some reason. I don't know what happened. But so we have that going on. Do we want to look at another chart?
Yeah. So, what you see, particularly this huge run-up where all is not well and gold is so vastly outperforming. But yes, click the second link and see stock market priced in Bitcoin over the same time period. And yeah, zoom in a bit. This is going back to August 11. That red line is the stock market. It looks flat in Bitcoin terms.
Yes. So describe for us, what does that mean? If somebody's looking at this, what does this mean?
Well, it means that the gains on Bitcoin were so significant that that your stock market is meaningless almost. And maybe you could find a different time horizon and the chart would look a little different. But if this is all about monetary debasement, and if you change your denominator, either Bitcoin or gold, then yeah, things are broken. And I think the practical takeaway for Christians and churches is you can't just assume that you can exist within the current system and continue staying ahead like the previous generation. I think Ryan's story that he shared from his church was really relevant here, where if you have a long-term expense or you have to save for something, you will get absolutely killed if you're not saving in something that is protecting you from debasement.
Yeah, Ryan. Oh, Ryan, you're paused. Oh. Yeah, share that story for us, Ryan, because you told it before we hopped on, and I think it'll resonate with people.
Yeah, I mean, I won't go into all the specifics, yeah. But our church was beginning to think about building a new building back in 2020, and so we started fundraising for it, and the price, I mean, it hasn't entirely doubled, but it's almost doubled, and when you're in the millions of dollars, that is a catastrophic event, because when you're raising money, even if you raise millions, but then the price doubles just in such a short period of time, because there's an enormous amount of debasement. So all the money that was raised, unless it's stored in Bitcoin, it goes up by 4% a year if it's in conservative savings, which usually that's typically what people do in those situations. But you're getting destroyed on the cost of goods and labor, and just inflation just wrecked it. So, it's really sad and discouraging. And my advice to any other church or, really anyone, if you have a very large expense, like, you need to put in the work and understand what's going on with our financial system and prepare accordingly. I would say put it in Bitcoin. If you can't get the conviction on that, then tried and true. I mean, even gold is going to protect you more, as it's demonstrating right now, and for the same reasons. But you can't leave it in dollars, and you can't leave it in a low interest savings account, because you're literally going backwards. Like, you're putting it into a boat with too many holes in it.
Yep.
And you're probably losing on a building project. If you're saving the cash, you're losing at least 4-5% a year. So, I mean,
this is where, again, the temptation is to think about Bitcoin as a way to try to get rich quickly, right? This is the way it's primarily talked about. This is the way that it's talked about on, you know, cable news and some of these finance channels or whatever. It's like the stock market's this game, and oh, look how good Bitcoin's doing. But what people just aren't thinking about it in the way that they ought to, which is, no, you are losing purchasing power regardless of whether Bitcoin exists or not. Like, you have a problem whether or not you see Bitcoin as part of your solution. And so that problem is something you have to reconcile. You have to reckon with it somehow. And so, and if you don't, it's not just like things are going to be okay for you. They're not going to be okay, economically speaking. And so, I just look at this. I'm somebody who, I've never owned a home. We were missionaries for, you know, we raised support, between raising support and actually on the field, it was 10 years. And so we didn't buy a house. We came back to the States in 2021 and we're not able to buy a house just because of, you know, the nature of things. And so we, you know, we did have Bitcoin and do have Bitcoin, and basically owning Bitcoin is the only path to home ownership that I have. And again, if Bitcoin continues to, you know, to do what it's been doing, you know, then Bitcoin will be part of what enables me to get a house. But other people, if you have to have something that's outpacing inflation, it's the only way. If you're not, you know, the longer you wait to buy a house or to buy, you know, one of these big purchases, the more, you know, if you don't have something that's gaining in value faster than the currency is losing value, you're going to be perpetually behind. You're just going to get farther and farther behind. This is why we do this podcast. This is why we talk about this. This is a big deal, and it's no small problem. This is an enormous problem for individuals, for families, for ministries, for businesses, whatever it is. This is a universal problem. When you have a broken denominator, the thing that you're using for basically every single transaction within a nation and all these other nation, whatever levels you want to look at, if that thing is broken, then it's just going to keep getting more and more dire over time.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of, oh yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say that, I think in this group, I'm the biggest neophyte in terms of the investing world. I think I understand Bitcoin a bit, and I put my so-called savings into real estate. So I'm different than some in this group. But the real estate has sort of been the chosen golden child for the government. The 1031 exchange, in my view, there's nothing even remotely similar to that in the tax code. And it's the idea that here's your golden child if you're wealthy and you want to have an asset that at least keeps up with inflation so you can keep working. Real estate has been the golden child chosen by the tax code, chosen by the government.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's necessarily foolish, though we may be seeing a huge crash coming, especially compared to Bitcoin. And I think that, to me, bringing it to a human level, when you see those charts, a lot of this has to do with trust issues. So if I can put a little pointer between the church thing you mentioned, Ryan, and the government, it's like when you lose trust, people start going, okay, I'm not going to invest in the system anymore. If you gave a big chunk of your money to a church, and I'm sure there's millions of details on your church, so it's not even bashing your church, but if you give a bunch of money to a church and they say it's going to be $1 million and it's actually going to be two, you lose a little bit of trust unless there's some really, really good explanations and it's not just a Simpsons monorail situation, you know? So the same thing goes for the government, and I'm 100% in this boat. I look at my business that I ran for a decade, which was a cafe restaurant, and I suffered through the pandemic and many, many businesses shut down. And a lot of old timers just said, I'm out, you know, even with really good businesses. And I went through that and I did not see the government be too encouraging. I saw them do a lot of crazy fixes where they just threw money out there, which went to massive amounts of fraud. A lot of that fraud went overseas, even with like PPP money and EIDL money, and I could list them off. And so my trust is, it never was high because I was reading and learning about these things through theology, through the Bible, and also through history. It was never high, but my trust is super low right now. So when you want trust in the system, you want people to say, I'm going to start a business. You want people to say, I'm going to buy real estate and develop it. You want people to say, I'm going to participate. And at some level, and I don't think this is negative, but at some level, buying gold, the principles behind gold and Bitcoin are the same. That's what you were getting at, Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
The principles are the same. It's just that we have something that's a new tech that's never been here before that applies these principles into the cryptographic technological world. And so that's the thing where gold bugs should love Bitcoin too, because the principles behind it are the same. So if you're a person who's not in desperate, dire need to have an hourly wage at like McDonald's, you know, it's keeping that type of situation out. If you have something to stand on, you don't have to be super wealthy. You could be middle class. You're going to have a tendency to say, I'm not trusting. Therefore, I'm not going to start a business. I'm not going to develop real estate. I'm not going to do these things which build the wealth of a nation, which build the GDP, et cetera. You're going to say, I'm going to sit back and let the clown show sort of destroy itself. And I'm going to hold on to gold. I'm going to hold on to Bitcoin. I'm going to sort of wait it out. I'm going to hold on to real estate even though that's probably not a great idea now. And so it's a sorry thing to see trust just be smashed in our nation. And what am I going to tell my children? I'm going to tell them the same thing. I'm not going to be bitter about it. I'm a Christian. I believe we should be hopeful for the future and we should be building things, whether it makes us, legacy money or not. But I'm still going to say this is not something you can trust. And mm-hmm. And I think that that's across the board. I think Gen Z is probably like the least trusting generation maybe in, I don't know how long, maybe ever, at least in the US. And what government has to do is somehow regain that trust by radical changes that say, we want to promote and give you good regulations and give you fair tax codes and give you all these things. And even then, it's going to be years before people will trust it. Because if you're going to say, I'm going to start a business.
Decades.
And then, yeah, decades. If you're going to say, and I do think the current administration is doing this. They're trying to encourage development in a lot of different areas. They're trying to, you know, make this happen. But if you're looking at like, okay, but 2 years from now, it could be literally the complete opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'll close my point with one anecdote, and it wasn't me, but it was a friend of ours. When the state is hungry for money, they come at you like bloodthirsty wolves. And this was the state of Hawaii, and they just started going through their ancient documents. And a friend of mine who has a 15-year business probably, when he first moved to Hawaii, he didn't realize about excise tax. We have excise tax here, not income tax. We do have income, but not sales tax. And so for the first few years of his business, he wasn't doing that tax properly. And so the state came after him for excise tax that was like 15 years old or something like that. And they came after him for multiple six figures, you know, like the entire savings of his family over the course of more than a decade. And this is predatory behavior by the state. This is not saying you made a mistake. This is saying, what's the easy pickings? It's somebody who is saving, who's doing what the Bible says about saving. And it doesn't even matter that it's more than a decade old. Even the IRS doesn't go back more than 7 years, you know? So I just use that as an example of when you start to view your state as predatory and antithetical to building, you stop building and you say, I'm just going to stick my gold in the ground or my Bitcoin in a cold wallet and wait it out.
And this is something, the thing that's really important here is because like we can imagine this has happened in other places where there have been places where the economy gets bad and people flee to gold. And then the government or people who are not good thinkers basically try to fault those people for fleeing to gold and for not continuing in the economy as normal. And so again, it's a form of gaslighting because it's like, You can't have it both ways, right? Because there's two ways that you can try to get trustworthiness. One is that you can demand it, and the other is that you can be worthy of it. And so you can see this same principle with parenting, right? You can have a parent who demands obedience from their children, or you could have a parent who, again, basically warrants trust and love from their children because of how they behave. And so if you're sitting here, there's Doug Wilson is a pastor who's written some of the best books about child rearing that I've read. Can't recommend them highly enough. But one of the things he talks about is he's like, when you're basically requiring obedience from your children is like writing a check. And so like if you're trying to cash checks that you haven't been, you know, you haven't been putting money into the account, you can write checks, but that doesn't mean that they're gonna cash. And so there's a lot of what the governments have been doing around the world is they've been drawing, they've been demanding, they've been doing these things, they've been trying to withdraw. And again, this is happening literally. Something else we could talk about is Social Security, right? Social Security is going to be unable, they estimate by 2033, they're going to be unable to fulfill all of their obligations. And so they'll be insolvent in the sense that they're not able to fulfill their complete obligations. So they're talking about 18%, they're basically only going to be able to pay out, I think like 82% in 2033 of what they would initially and what they've promised to people. And so this is just a reality that's going on. People are depending. They've gotten used to a level of stability. They've gotten used to a government who's just been able to step in and solve any problem that they have by printing more money and kicking the can further down the road. This is not sustainable. It cannot continue without severe injustice that's already happening. It's only going to get worse. And so this is just something like, if you are depending on the government to come save you, you're mistaken. Like you're putting your trust in the wrong place, and it's not going to end well.
Could I share something on the screen real quick? And
yeah, do it.
It's a super simple thing. If someone hasn't seen it before, it's called the Laffer curve. And it's so easy to understand that I think it'll stick. And this is an idea of taxation, but I think it applies to everything, including the child raising that you said. Here's the Laffer curve. The maximum amount is, let's say T in the middle here, of revenue that the government could create for itself is at some point, it's not going to be nothing. If you charge 0% tax rate, you're not going to get anything. But if you charge 100% or 90% tax rate, you're also getting nothing.
Mm.
So the number is not known exactly what's the perfect thing. That's the game, you know, not to say that the goal of life is to get the greatest tax revenue, but keeping this in mind for the other things we discussed, you have to actually place that at somewhere where it's still motivating to go to work and to do your thing, but not too high, because the higher, if you make it too high, your revenue actually goes down because people will refuse to cooperate. They will refuse to work. Or if you're a business owner, you will buy a Hummer instead of taking the profit, you know, or whatever. Section 19 write-offs, you know, or whatever. And so there's a thousand ways that you will figure out not to pay when you perceive that what's happening is unjust. And so I think this is true with taxes, but it's also true in those other areas that you you mentioned. And it's such a simple drawing. I think it helps to sort of imprint that in the mind.
Mm. Yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah. Ryan, I did a little bit of math for your church. You feel free to pass it on if you want. Hypothetical. I don't know the exact numbers.
It could have been a 40% increase, but still, we're still talking millions of dollars. So we'll say conservative, it was a 40% increase in the building costs over the last 5 years.
So let's say, so I did the math with Bitcoin. Increase. Okay, let's say it's a $10 million goal that they originally raised, okay? And then it went up 40%, right? Let's say then it was 14 million.
14 million, yeah.
14 million, let's say. So if they had put 10% into Bitcoin, so 1 million into Bitcoin in the summer of 2020, they would have bought 108 Bitcoin, which today is worth 13.2 million. So a 10% hedge would have made them, what's that? 12.2 million. Okay, let's say it was just a 5% hedge and they got $500,000 worth of Bitcoin, right? In the summer 2020, they have about 54 Bitcoin. That would be worth 6.6 million. So just a 5% hedge would protected against even like a 50 or 60% increase in the price of their project over a 5 year period.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh man.
This is one of the reasons why every church needs Bitcoiners, and then also those Bitcoiners have to volunteer to be on the finance department, or at least get the ear of those that make the decisions. And I would say on the earlier side, because the debasement's only accelerating. So
which influencers do we need in our culture to start speaking out about this, like Christian theologians and stuff like that?
Is there anyone besides
William Rhodes? Dave Ramsey to could repent.
Dave Ramsey, hey, let's go. Stranger things have happened.
There's thousands of churches across the country like take their people through his training material.
Well,
so,
I mean, if you're talking about influence, probably one of the people just got killed. Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk was a Bitcoiner. He actually talked about it a fair amount. But yeah, if you just think about like who actually has sway with people. It's a good question. I don't know who would need to.
Who would be the biggest?
It would probably. This is funny. This is a conversation for a different day. But I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about Stephen A. Smith. And Stephen A. Smith is apparently seriously considering running for president. And part of the reason why it's even like, I mean, just if somebody would have told you that 10 years ago, that Stephen A. Smith, for those of you guys who are, Stephen A. Smith is like a host of a show on ESPN, a few different things, but just like, I mean, debate show, argues like crazy. He's not known for being a serious person, but he's respected enough and has like a high enough Q score, which is basically like the popularity at a, you know, national level or whatever it is. He's got a good enough, you know, reputation where he's thinking about leveraging that into basically political a career in politics. And so this is what we're seeing is like, if you look, because of the fracturization that's happening with as media gets fractured, as all these other things get fractured, you know, news doesn't have the same sway as it once did, all these other things. The one thing that people, that still is like unifying people enough to have something approaching what's called like a monoculture, where kind of everybody has like a shared experience of something that's going on, is sports. And so like somebody, it'd probably be something, like if we were trying to get a number of Christians on board, there's probably a real sense. I mean, I'm sure Trump's probably the real answer to this, just because of how big, you know, politics is. He's being positive about Bitcoin. I'm sure that's had some sort of healthy angle, but I think that, you know, an athlete, some sort of athlete, that would be helpful.
Hey, we need to get...
I'm not trying to belabor the point, but I'm thinking if we're on the church topic, you know, pastors, yep. Pastors are looking to, in my 20 years ago, when I was doing my theological things, it was like, some of them are gone now. You know, we just lost Vody. We just lost, yep. Art Sproul. We lost MacArthur. I'm a Piperian, pietist myself. We also had, what do you call it? Wayne Grudem, but I think he has mental decline now due to, something. I can't remember, ALS maybe or something like that. And so I'm wondering, who are the people with that same level of theological influence so that the pastors go, okay, this isn't me taking the trusted money from my congregations and taking a big risk. It's actually the opposite. Because that's the flip for churches that needs to happen, is for them not to say, sorry about that, guys.
If only we could...
I put it on do not disturb.
You mute yourself. Nice. It's continue the conversation. If only we could do a series of articles on the Gospel Coalition website. Jordan, do you think we can make that happen?
That's to be continued. It's we need to talk to our boy. But yeah, I mean, this really is. It's something. There's a lot of people who recognize that something's wrong, but they don't know how to put their finger on it. Bitcoin sounds too insane. I get it. I just tweeted the other day, or I sent a message on Facebook. It was like, I get that Bitcoin seems risky. I get that it seems cringe. But you don't get to choose the world that you live in. Like, this is, it doesn't matter what the outward appearances of things. What matters is what's real.
We were talking about that before we came on. Everyone doesn't get to, like, if you don't want to deal with debasement, tough luck. Everyone's going to deal with debasement. Like, yep. Everyone's going to be wrecked by inflation in the years and decades ahead. So, yeah, my encouragement, like, it's kind of like the gospel. Nobody gets the gospel unless they see themselves as a sinner in need of a savior, right?
Yep.
And the same goes for Bitcoin. If you do not need safety from debasement, or if you don't need an exit from it, you don't need Bitcoin. But ultimately, what we're trying to tell people is you do need something to deal with debasement. And so try to figure out what are the possible solutions. Make a list, do your research, do the work. If you don't want to do the work, you're being lazy, and then you're going to suffer for it, or your family's going to suffer, or your kids, or your church. Like, at the end of the day, like, this is, sometimes we can be tempted to be a little bit impatient, but it's like, this has been going on for a long time.
The Romans Road for Bitcoin.
Well, this, honestly, one of the things I think about all the time, I mean, we wrote a book called The Gospel According to Bitcoin, because there's 100 things in which, there's 100 things that happen in which you can analogize either Bitcoin with the gospel or the gospel with Bitcoin. And one of the things is one of the things that happened over and over again was that people's objections that they had to Jesus, they had aesthetic objections to what Jesus was doing. Like they objected to the fact that he was the he was a suffering Messiah. Like this offended people. They're like, we were expecting Messiah who's a king, who's ruling, who's squashing his enemies. And so that offended people, the fact that he didn't look like the way that they wanted to look, they wanted him to look. And this happens over and over again. Christians, we look weak, and yet we continue. We're here 2,000 years later when other things aren't. You know, and so this is a temptation. It's always a temptation, is to look on the outward appearance. And the outward appearance of Bitcoin is silly. It's foolish. It looks ridiculous. It's magic internet money that somebody made up 16 years ago. It looks stupid. Like, and so people, there's a whole group of people out here, Dave Ramsey included, David Bonson included, all these people who they look at Bitcoin and it looks so stupid. It offends them to the point that they don't want to take it seriously. And we're past the time, like we're past the point where that's an acceptable thing to happen. Like at this point, 16 years in, it is now a character flaw on the part of these guys for them to continue making fun of Bitcoin and treating it like it's for little kids. Like it's ridiculous. They ought to be ashamed of themselves, and they need to like wake up, and or else their entire reputations are going to be destroyed. Like that's really what we're looking at. Those are the
They need to humble themselves. Ultimately.
Yes, it's arrogance and pride is what it is. It absolutely is.
Amen.
So, Ryan, what would it take? I mean, it has to start local. We have a lot of conversations about our family. How do we raise our kids well? How do we figure out things locally? So it has to start locally in our own churches. So I was able to help my church accept Bitcoin donations, and I've started giving my offering in Bitcoin. And I did the legwork for it. And it's been profitable. My tithe is up 25%. Because they've held it. So what does that look like for you to go talk to them? Like, okay, the cost of doing this has gone up 40%. They're obviously going back to the congregation to say, we need to raise more money. How do you build a proposal? How do you show them the backdated math? If you had done this, you'd be here. Okay. Now in the future, is debasement going to continue? Because you might say, oh, that was just COVID. That was COVID money printing. We knew there was inflation, but it's stabilized. So you got to ask that question. Is this going to continue to happen in the future? If you can show that, do you think your leadership would sit down and say, hey, it's actually bad stewardship. We know this, bad stewardship to hold this in a 4% returning savings account. And is it good stewardship to put a percentage into Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think from conversations I've had, I think our leaders in our church are coming around. They've been reading books. We've been having conversations. I think there's another level of conviction that's required for pastors and elders because they're stewarding the people's money. And so that can cause, like, you really need to be... you have to be really bold, and you have to lead with a lot of conviction.
Yep.
And that's not easy to come by because as a culture, and again, I'm not saying this is no personal dig against anybody, but we're a risk averse culture. We're, another way of saying that is we're a very feminized culture when it comes to things like this, I know that kind of sounds harsh, but it's just true.
I don't think we can quite say like, It's not just feminine to want to be risk averse. Like, okay, right. There's a certain amount of wisdom in trying to avoid certain types of risks. But again, it just kind of depends on.
I say that just because it's crossed over into the way we do a lot of things.
Yeah.
It's not just.
I think what you're saying is boldness, kind of. It's like being bold is not the same as.
I gotta reach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, something we talked about this a while back, but it might not have been on this pod. And one of the simple things could be Osh gives such and such amount of Bitcoin to his church and requests that it would remain as Bitcoin until it needs to be spent on something. Or say, I'm giving you Bitcoin. It would be like giving you a property, right? And I'm asking that you don't just convert it into money. Not to say you have to, because when you give a gift, it should be... But it would give the freedom to a pastor or a church to say, hey, it was given to us and requested that it would stay in this format as this asset.
That could be kind of a first few simple steps, especially for a church that's open to the idea, but doesn't want to cause strain and grief to their, Bitcoin unbelieving, congregation.
I still think for the vast majority of people, like, unfortunately, I think when I think about the churches and pastors, it really comes down to their objection to holding Bitcoin is just because they're thinking about in the terms of, I have so much capital and trust. Again, it's like I have storehouses of trust with my people. Is this something that I want to spend it on? You know, how much do I actually believe that this is actually a problem? And even if I do, like, what's going to be the cost to try to get this across? And we've talked with our brothers in the PCA, like, some of them, they had to really put 15 years of credibility on the line to try to get this, you know, the Bitcoin overture to try, you know, when they presented that, they had, you know, what's his name? Ben Haley has talked about that. He's like, when I presented that and started talking about that, he's like, there were people who I'd known for 10, 15 years who I saw it in their eyes, they lost respect for me. And so I think that we do have to recognize, like, this is a real thing that people are going to have to reckon with, that isn't a small thing. And at the same time, the issue that we're talking about is a big deal. So it really, I think the call for bravery and boldness really is, you know, I'm sorry, you're not owed an easy choice. Like, you're not owed an easy situation.
I think starting as a Bitcoin donor is definitely the first step, but unless you're like you're the sugar daddy of the church and you're the main funder of the building project, it's just a drop in the bucket. Yeah. But I think you can still be more compelling. You can initiate it. You can set up that Bitcoin account donation with a $5,000. Like, it should be meaningful. Like, make it worth the effort.
Yeah.
So give them a few thousand. They set up the Bitcoin account with River or Strike or something. They do the work, and then it's going to sit there until you actually say, let this be the last expense to open the building. Okay, that's your donor's request. Churches honor donor's request. I want this Bitcoin to be spent right before we open the doors. And then you can start talking to others. Then you can build the campaign for, hey guys, let's put 3% of this money into Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Here's what this would do. And you get some of our friends, right, that are sophisticated investors that are respected. Say, hey, we'll do a phone call. Don't have to listen to me. The prophet's never welcome in his hometown. So, like, Ryan's—he's just the wacko. Like he's crazy. He's the Bitcoiner. Yeah, we all get it, but we like him, right? But we can bring in some connections from some like well-respected companies that are Christians and Bitcoiners who will sit down and say, "Hey, here's the math," and like I'd had a crazy conversation that was so surprising recently with an older gentleman who has authority to allocate money for a Christian organization and is not willing to risk the organization's assets with Bitcoin and has a number of questions around it and is just not going to go there. But I just found out that he has his own allocation to Bitcoin. And it's like, it was really surprising. But I think that is that difference. Like, you might find elders and finance committee members that are like, you know what? You're right, Ryan. I'm gonna buy some Bitcoin. I'm gonna put some of my retirement in this. But oh, the church's money? That feels like that's like an extra level of, oh, that's God's money. What if I'm wrong? And I think that's a good instinct, but it's still
wrongly applied.
It was wrongly applied, and you're being naive about the debasement.
Yeah.
Because if you know the debasement is a given, it's bad stewardship to lose 36%. Because you only gained 4%.
That's what I'm saying. Like, again, it's a longer conversation, but I really do think there is worldly aspects to our culture, especially being risk averse, that has seeped into all different areas. And it's kind of subtle, but you're like, why is that the worst thing? But like holding a currency that loses 8% of its value, why is that not, that's actually worse. Like, so it's just what we view as bad. Like, it's just, but here's the thing. If you store it in the currency, like, we've all been conditioned to just take it, right? We're all boiling in a pot. And if you leave it in the currency and you get 8% stolen from you each year, well, you know, you were being conservative, you were being safe. And it's like, man, like, it's just acceptable losses at this point. It's acceptable casualties of the resources. And that, I just think that needs to change. We need, again, this is what Christians need to speak the truth and not be ashamed. Debasement's bad. It's impacting everyone. And we can't be afraid to say it, you know, because, you know, at some point they will wake up and they will look back at us three, four crazy guys, you know, and be like, they were right.
Yeah. And I think it is, there is this liability where, and the risk averse, where if you make an active decision when you steward the finances for the church, you can be actively to blame. Yep. If you sit and do nothing, and well, look, the construction costs went up by 40%. That's outside of our control. What, do yep. I control the cost of
exactly.
lumber?
Yeah.
Surely not. So I've now deflected the blame.
It's playing not to lose. It's not playing yep. to win. And again, it's another thing where we haven't been playing to win in so many different areas. And it's like, it's absolutely devastating.
Oh my gosh, we need to do a whole episode on that. Again, we kind of, that's kind of what every episode is. And now that if we summarize that, yeah, it's like, playing not to lose versus playing to win. Oh,
man.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of implications, especially on culture, politics.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, man, we could go a lot more on this topic, but we'll cut it there. Ryan, Oshawa, appreciate you guys. Matt had to leave. Again, we are grateful for you guys for joining us on this episode of To the Unknown Pod. If you have questions, shoot them to us at social@tgfb.com. We'd love to answer them, or find us on Twitter. You can send us messages on there. I think our DMs are open. That should work. If you have enjoyed this episode, go and like, subscribe, leave reviews, that kind of thing. Comment on YouTube. All these things make a big difference in terms of other people finding them. So we are grateful for you, and we will be back on another episode later this week with the Mountain Presbies. This should be fun, and we will see you then.